man, I made some tea and then I lost it. How many times a day do you think I do that?
A lot.
I leave like a trail of abandoned teacups around the house.
I see mugs filled with lukewarm water, many rooms of the
house.
One
of my signature moves, Walling.
It's just like a patented Jerry Walling move. We are really loving the 5-star reviews you guys are leaving in iTunes. We have a bunch of new reviews. One from slav.isv. It says, insights into entrepreneurial life. Being an entrepreneur isn't only about building businesses. It's about building a lifestyle, which includes everything, business, family, leisure time, personal time. Rob and Sherry provide a truly unique perspective and advice on how to build such a life. If you have your own business or are just thinking about starting one, this podcast must be on your listen list or you'll miss things you would have never thought of. And then a really nice one from jscott79. He says, I really enjoy this show. Rob and Sherry are great podcasters and have produced a super informative and educational show. I love the diversity of topics and entertainment value as well. Lastly, from Lentil's mom in the US, harmonizing tech and psychology. She says, don't think that the advice here applies just to being a founder. I love the in-depth discussions about how to balance technical business and the mental and psychological side of oneself. So thanks again for the 5-star reviews. And if you haven't left us one, would really appreciate it.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Walling.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
So our topic for today is about the value of simplicity. We'd like to take a two-prong approach to this topic. One aspect of simplicity that we'd like to talk about is the simplicity of things, simplifying your belongings, your workspaces, your homes, so that they are less stressful, less chaotic, and kind of provide the kind of environment and value statement that reflects what you want your inner life to feel like. And then the second aspect of this topic is simplifying life and really thinking about the use of time and the diversity of things that compete for our time and our attention, and making some clear decisions about what to focus on in order to have, again, this more streamlined approach to life and emotional well-being.
I feel like maybe 15, 20 years ago, probably about 20 years ago, I became aware of this idea of simplifying, but I like didn't have it in me to do it. I would hear people start talking about it. I'd hear audiobooks or whatever, read books about it. But I was a collector of DVDs. I had hundreds of DVDs, hundreds of CDs, thousands upon thousands of comic books. I liked things and I liked tons of books too, hundreds and hundreds of books growing up. We didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up, but we bought a lot of secondhand. We bought library sales. And then as I got older, I just put money into buying things. Like I didn't travel particularly. I mean, before we got married, I didn't invest it into experiences as much as I did about acquiring things that were entertaining. I mean, I didn't like buy fancy cars or anything like that, but I kind of invested in my businesses and my education. And then I invested in books and CDs and DVDs. And it was right after we got married, maybe 2-3 years, I really started feeling that desire and really started making a change. And we like got rid of all of that stuff and I sold it on Amazon, eBay, Craigslist, and we moved to more digital things. It was really nice that kind of the digital revolution came by around that time. We got a Roku. Remember that? We stopped dealing with physical media. And once I had that mental shift, and then when the Kindle came out, that was crazy. And I started selling all my books too.
I think we also were moving a lot during that time. We'd done several large moves like across the country and back. And every item that we owned suddenly became something that we were going to have to pack and move and carry up and downstairs. And like we really had to look at each item and be like, do I want this enough to go through the hassle of taking care of it and moving it and all of the things that are going to be involved with keeping it?
That's right. We moved, I think it was 10 houses in 10 years. Maybe it was 8 in 8 years. It was a lot. And you're right. We started evaluating everything that we owned and everything that we purchased at that point. And that's actually when we came up with the criteria. It was based on a friend, but when we started traveling at that point, and the only souvenirs that I will buy are consumables and wearables, meaning I will buy limoncello from Italy, or I will buy a really nice bottle of whiskey or of wine, because we will consume that and we will enjoy that experience when we do it. Or wearables, like buy a nice earring, buy nice clothes. I bought t-shirts with Da Vinci things on them. We buy stuff like that. And I find that that has been a better use of buying stuff than buying a tchotchke that sits on a shelf or something that like takes up space. I mean, I guess maybe art could be another one. If you put it on the wall, that would be worth it. But I really stopped buying stuff when I was places that was just going to sit in a drawer or sit on a shelf. And I started buying things that I would be able to enjoy more on a regular basis.
I think we've also realized how much both of us dislike clutter and visually busy environments. We were house sitting for someone in New England, in Connecticut, and we moved into this house, and it was a nice house. It was an old kind of farmhouse in Connecticut, really lovely, but the people who lived in the house were really collectors, and they had like small figurines and statues and just like things that I'm sure people gave them and were meaningful and had a story to them. But oh my goodness, it was so overwhelming to be in that house with all of the things. Every surface was full. And I think that was one of the other things where we just sort of realized, I do not like this kind of visual experience, and I don't want my home to feel like that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Once I felt we both made that shift around the same time, and you and I each still have the things that we buy or collect. I buy a lot of games. I kickstart a lot of games. I actually think I might have a problem, but that's probably another show.
Intervention.
You happen to like clothes and shoes.
What?
Clothes and shoes addict intervention. But you've been able to shift to like subscription services like Latote, and I buy games, we play them a bunch of times, and then I sell them or give them away. And so even that shift, and then everything else, like everything else in my life, it floats in and out.
Very few things are permanent, like actual objects do I have a relationship with where I think this is going to be a long-term relationship.
That's right. And that shift, it took a long time for me to make that mindset. Literally years of just grinding it out and doing the moves. But now that we're there, when I go to environments where there is a bunch of stuff, I look around and I think, oh yeah, they should get rid of that. Like I think their lives would be simpler if they got rid of this, that, and this.
And it's not just about the visual appearance of stuff. It's about the time and energy that it takes to maintain stuff, to keep it clean, to keep it up to date, the amount of time that you spend like deciding which of your 150 DVDs you're going to watch, or there's just this mental energy that goes into maintaining stuff that is, at least for us at this point in our lives, kind of an added distraction. Things break and you have to fix them. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be gluing together a nutcracker doll.
Right. And so that process involved selling a lot of things, giving just buckets and buckets of things away, right? We've got those big bins, and we still have to do that though, even now. I mean, every 6 months or maybe even 3 to 6 months, especially with the kids, because the kids get a lot of gifts and other stuff from people. And we find that when they stop playing with stuff, that it's just time to give it away to friends or to Goodwill or wherever.
So now we're in this new season of simplicity, as we've talked about in the past couple weeks on the podcast episodes. We're in the process of moving from our 1,200 square foot house. And while our house is on the market, we have decided for the sake of our sanity not to live in it. We just don't want to nag our kids that much about cleaning up. So we are living in two small bedrooms in a friend's house. And it has meant that we are living in a much smaller space and really have to be like ninja-like in what we will allow into our space or not into our space. And so it's really a whole other level of practicing simplicity that actually is going really well. Like, the kids haven't been moaning about wanting more of their toys or more of their things, and they really haven't seemed to be that stressed about being in a smaller space.
That also ties into Play, P-L-E-Y, the subscription Lego service we use. It's like Netflix for Legos. That helps because they do get a new Lego set every week or two. They're able to play with it and then they send it back. So they don't, you don't aggregate them in these Ziploc bags with the rules that are sitting in a closet or sitting somewhere. And I find that, like we talked about, I don't know, 10 episodes ago, it's kind of that sharing economy, I think, plays into this value of simplicity and not having all that stuff around all the time.
It just makes it more feasible and still live at a lifestyle that, at least for our kids, they like having different toys to play with. So we can have lots of different toys without accumulation.
Right. And there is actually a really good essay on this topic. It's called Stuff, and it's by Paul Graham. We'll link it up in the show notes. But this was one of those early on that really made me realize I was already on this path of simplifying, but it made me realize why it was such a good idea. And it solidified in my head that I needed to do this. And so he just talks about how a lot of the stuff we're talking about now, just how it clutters your mind, how it clutters your time, and how you're actually just much better off not having a lot of stuff.
Another book that people are talking a lot about right now, at least people in my life, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And to be honest, I haven't read this book yet, but a lot of people have really talked about how helpful it is to have a strategy that helps guide what they're going to keep and what they're going to get rid of. And it's a strategy that seems very much based on joy. What brings joy? What is meaningful? And those are the things that are kept, and anything else goes. So that's a book to pick up if you are thinking about some strategies to simplify for yourself.
Yeah. And if you think it's kind of ironic that we're recommending that you go buy a book when we're talking about having less stuff.
Oh my gosh, it can be on your Kindle.
That's exactly right. Right. It's like buying an e-version of it or an Audible version of it. I mean, because that's the thing. It's not that I don't buy things. I buy a lot of ebooks, a lot of Audible books, a lot of digital movies, you know, but I've just tried to make it so that it's not some physical thing. And there's this phrase called digital hoarding now, where you can get too much and get overwhelmed there. But I think that's probably a topic for another show. The other book I want to mention is called Essentialism. I've been talking about this book for, I don't know, since I read it maybe the first week it came out, again, to find out, can I push what we're doing to the next level? And what I found is that it made me feel good about where we are and about where I am mentally with this topic, because a lot of the things he said, I'm already mentally there. And that was like reassuring and reaffirming of, yeah, you're doing okay with this. You're not getting too much clutter back in your life or whatever. And then he also had some good ideas of stuff that, you know, that I hadn't thought about. The cool part about essentialism is not just about getting rid of stuff, but it's about being essential both with your belongings and with your time. And a big thing he talks about in the book is about learning to say no. He says, so many people overcommit. And I think that that is probably a shift, a mental shift for a lot of people that happens at a certain point in your life where you realize, you know what? I can't agree to all this stuff, even though I really want to. You just have to, at a certain point, frankly, it's you default to saying no, unless it's hell yeah. Derek Sivers has that. He says it's either no or it's hell yeah. But it's, if you're lukewarm about it, then it should be no. And I certainly have a lot of friends. I mean, I think we have friends who they overcommit, and you see them driving all over town, whether it's overcommitting their kids to doing 5 activities and driving all over the place, overcommitting themselves. It is something that it can kind of drive you crazy, and it can leave you running ragged and frankly, not enjoying your life. And it is hard to tell people no, but you learn to do it in a very tactful way, in a way that's just like, you know what? I just can't quite do it. I would love to, but this is not something I can fit in right now.
And I think that's so important, particularly in the founder space, because your time has a whole new value when you are in the midst of launching something or running something or taking care of something. And there's this sense of flexible time, which is why many founders do what they do, and that's fantastic. But that flexible time can quickly become sucked up time or misused time if people aren't really, really careful about having a level of focus and priority, as well as keeping their time commitments very simple.
That's right. So I think if you're at the beginning of your career and you're looking for new opportunities, then I think you probably need to say yes to everything, and you just need to hustle and work a lot.
Yeah, that's sort of the story of your early 20s.
Yep.
Try everything, try lots of things, take any opportunity and make as many connections as you can.
That's right. I did that. I think you did that. And I did overcommit. And that teaches you two things. One, boy, this doesn't feel great that I'm overcommitted. But two, it just gets you out there and you make connections and there are opportunities come out of that. So I believe if you're really early in your career, you should do that. You should say yes.
You also learn a lot about what you like and don't like that you can't learn in the abstract.
And then at a certain point, you're going to just slowly want to pull that back as you find out who you are and you build your audience, your business, things start working better for you. You're just going to have to say no to whatever, interview requests or people who want to take you to lunch to ask your feedback or consulting. There's just stuff over time that it becomes less and less possible to do. One other strategy I use, in addition to saying no to stuff that I'm on the fence about, is when I say yes, I almost always book 15-minute meetings. Like if I'm going to do a Skype call, if it's not like an actual podcast or something like that, I don't really tend to do a lot of lunches anymore around town. If people invite me out, I'll be like, yeah, I can go from 11 to 11:30. Or 11:30 to noon, and just keep it really short. Sometimes it runs over, but it's like another way of time boxing it pretty tightly so you don't wind up at sucking down an hour because everyone feels like you booked an hour on the calendar.
Unless it's lunch with your wife and then the afternoon is open, right?
Oh, that's true. Yes. 2 to 3 hours I typically book for that. Yes.
The Italian lunch.
That's the right answer, yeah.
That is the point, though, is that you have unrushed time in the moments that you
want to have unrushed time. You have lots of time to play a board game. You have lots of time to sit and drink wine with your spouse. Like, that is what you're buying when you're being really efficient and simple. And I think another piece of this is focus. Obviously, choosing what to say no to, choosing what to say yes to, those hell yes moments where you're deciding, this is what I'm going after. This is what I'm about right now. And this is what I'm prioritizing in my time. And we've talked about on the show several times the value of retreats and the way that retreats play into both of us, the decision making that goes into focus. This is what I'm doing this year. This is what I'm not doing this year. I'm saying no to this. And I am getting ready to go on my retreat actually tomorrow. So I am beginning the process of thinking through all of the things that are on my plate and what is life-giving and fun, what is hell yes, and what isn't, and what needs to change and shift for the year to come.
You expect any dramatic changes?
That's possible. Maybe. Yeah.
I could see 2016 being a year of big changes for you.
Yeah, I think I have always been someone who has enjoyed doing a diversity of things and likes to dabble. I don't really like to have just one job or do one thing all day, every day. And I know that about myself, and I try to be simple and focused even while still keeping my life pretty varied and interesting. But I'm doing a lot of things now where I'm running a clinical practice, I'm supervising people, I'm teaching a couple classes, I'm teaching yoga, I'm teaching yoga in my clinic to my patients, I'm doing the podcast, I'm doing some Zen founder consulting. And all of those things are really actually lovely and I enjoy them, but I need to sort of think about where I want to put my focus. And I think one of the things that I am feeling right now is that I'm expending a lot of energy and keeping all of the fires burning, but nothing is really growing big and nothing is really flourishing in the way that I would like it to. And my kids are a little older now. I feel like I have more time and energy to give to something that I'm building that's less about keeping my connections healthy and more about, like, this is my thing. This is my next big thing that's mine that I'm committed to and am really focused on. So I'm hoping my retreat will help me to prioritize what that might be.
So flash forward 1 week and you've gone on a retreat and returned and made some decisions about what your 2016 is going to look like. So maybe start by telling us how your retreat looked, like what the logistics of it were and how, what you did.
Yeah, so I took my retreat at the Central Coast of California, which is about 2.5 hours away from our house. So I decided to begin the day with a yoga class here in town before getting in the car and driving. So that was kind of nice because it just centered and helped me stretch and those kinds of things. Then I drove mostly in silence, but to be honest, I was really struggling with like a lot of negativity in my head. And I decided to actually turn on some really like adrenaline fueled music and kind of rock out in the car. And that actually helped me enter my retreat with a little bit better attitude and sort of spirit about it. So yeah, I had a couple of days alone and I made some decisions about even the content of my retreat to begin this process towards simplicity, because that's been important in my past retreats. So I ate really simply while I was on the retreat, no alcohol, no coffee, no sugar. I just had kind of simple, healthy, good meals. I slept a lot. When I got there, I took a long walk and then I went to sleep for like 2 hours and then I got up and read and just had some quiet time. I had a really, really quiet day the first day. So those decisions towards quiet and being really mindful of what was going into my body kind of helped set the tone for more reflection, at least for me, because I'm less distracted by how I feel or stimulation around me.
Well, sure. If you were to have gone there and sat down and watched 4 episodes of Jessica Jones, you're basically just bringing input, and you're eating some Doritos and watching Jessica Jones. It's like it doesn't set you up for the like quiet and give your mind space to expand. Because that's how I think of it, as like our day-to-day lives are so, not even that they're that bad. I mean, but they are hectic and they're filled with things. You know, they're filled with picking the kids up and work and phone calls and emails and doing things. And when you go there and you can just poof, let it go away. It's like it takes 6 hours, 8 hours, 24 hours, and you just find yourself almost clearing. Like you get this sense of clarity that slowly allows these big decisions and these big thoughts and these larger concepts. I find it so much easier to think through them once that happens, but you have to give it space.
And I think space is a nice way to put it. You have to give it blank space. And so that's why not a lot of distraction, no TV. And even for me, at least at this point on this retreat, everybody doesn't have to do this. But like even thinking about the ways that the foods that I eat or the things that I put in my body like are designed to help me regulate my mood or my energy level, and to step away from those patterns and create some space there so I can kind of assess like, wow, am I drinking too much? Am I drinking too much coffee? Like, are these patterns that I've set up for myself good? And I think the only way to really ask that question is to have some distance from them.
And so this episode is focused on simplicity. And talk to me about how that came about. Like, do you feel like the retreat was simplifying, or how the goals that you put in place are going to maybe simplify your life in 2016?
Yeah, one of the things that I went on the retreat thinking a lot about is the question of focus. And like many people, I have lots of different things that I love and that I'm involved in, whether it's activities at my kids' school or my own yoga practice and teaching yoga and teaching classes at the local university and having a business and doing Zen Founder. So there's lots and lots of things on my list. And I realized that moving forward this year, I'd like to just have clarity about things to focus on and what to let go of. And one of the ways that I tackled that this year was to take a personal inventory. I know have talked in various podcasts about Strengths Finder. I've taken that before. That was okay for me, but it didn't really rock my world. A similar one that I decided to take this year is called Values in Action, the VIA survey. And as an aside, it's available online and it's free. You can pay for more complicated reports and feedback, but you can just take the survey for free. So anyway, I did this and it was a neat reflection of what is important to me right now. And the strengths that it identified, my number one was curiosity and my number two was creativity. There were a lot of others in my top five that I think were really correct and really fit me. So three was forgiveness, four was social intelligence, five was appreciation of beauty and excellence. And all of those seem to really resonate with what I'm valuing right now in my life. But I think having these top two, this curiosity and creativity, that became the question that I asked myself about all of my activities. So then I went through the list of all the things I'm doing and I asked, is this sort of feeding my need for curiosity? Is it helping me to be more creative as a creative outlet? And I identified the things that were sort of lowest on that spectrum. And those are the things that I'm going to eliminate for this year. So I said no to teaching a couple of university classes that I've already taught, that although I really enjoy doing them, they stimulate other values towards being an educator, towards working with students and being a mentor. You know, they're good things. But right now, I'm most about curiosity and creativity. And so they were lower on that metric. And so I'm not going to do them this year. I'm not going to focus on that.
And so what did that translate into in terms of maybe some specific things? You had to say no when you're going to eliminate certain things versus maybe some new stuff that you're looking at attacking?
Yes, I am going to say no to some of the things that I've done before and aren't novel or new. I am also really excited about what's happening with Zen Founder. I think that this podcast is actually one of the things that really fulfills both of those values. It's creative. It's also an outlet for me to learn a lot about kind of the inner lives of founders and their families. And so it's really, it like works for my creativity and learning. So that's something that I'm going to press more deeply into. And we've been talking about that on the podcast in the last couple of weeks anyway, but that's going to be a higher priority for me. I'd like to do some more consulting with founders because, again, that fits within this larger umbrella of things that are creative and interesting and intellectually stimulating. And then one of the things that I really loved on my retreat is just sitting down and doing some writing. So I can't make any promises. I'm a little scared to commit to a full plan or to like say out loud, I'm going to write a book this year. But I know that that fits within the values that I see as important in my life right now. And I am experiencing a lot of joy thinking about it and beginning to do some initial writing. So who knows, maybe this will finally be the year that I write a book.
That is such a weak commitment. If you're listening to this and you would like to hear Sherry write a book, it would probably be by Dr. Sherry Walling with Rob Walling. Would I be the second author? Because we would collaborate on it.
Maybe you'll have to go on your retreat and see.
So if you want to hear basically a book on this topic, on the Zen Founder stuff, tweet yes, I want to hear Zen Founder write a book or something to that effect. Because I do think that it's a goal of yours and it's something that you really want to do. But I know that it's hard to commit to such a monumental effort because there's a concern in the back of your mind that a year from now, if plans change or if you're not able to pull it through, that somehow there will be negative repercussions and that we'll look back and point and laugh at you. And that's not what's going to happen. So I think that the realization that you want to do this and to be able to talk about it here on the podcast, I think is a good thing. And I think that it's something that we should figure out. You and I sit down, figure out schedules and figure out a way to make this happen. We've already started talking about a little bit of whether you have some time each day to do it that we carve out, or whether you go once a month for 2 or 3 days off on your own and basically hammer out thousands of words in these binge weekends, in essence. I think that making this a deliberate choice to do and to lean into this creativity and curiosity this year, I think is a really good testament.
I think it's a little bit scary because it feels so deeply important to me. And I think once you do this kind of personal reflection and evaluation and you get those things that are like sitting on the bottom of your belly and you get them out on paper and they're sitting there in front of you, staring at you. I mean, I know founders have felt this. You know, you feel this the moment that you have this idea that you're like, whoa, this could actually work. And I'm staring at this like little dream that's now out on paper and I'm now talking about on a podcast. And yeah, it's scary. It feels vulnerable and it feels like I'm so afraid that it won't work. So I guess that just puts me right in there with the rest of you.
Exactly. I think that's a good analogy. It's this creating something from nothing with risk. I mean, there's a real chance that it won't happen. And will it crush you if it doesn't happen? And how do you keep it from slipping off the radar or just not getting it done or pushing through the hard times? Because writing 40 or 50,000 words is a non-trivial task to do in 6 to 9 months when you're working full time and doing all the stuff that you do. So I totally feel that. I can certainly relate.
Yeah. One of the other things that I really took away from my retreat was this recognition or memory of myself as an athlete, being a high school and college athlete, and then going to grad school and spending lots of time in the library and then having kids. And, you know, I've continued to try to take care of myself, but not really been an athlete in the same way. So I impulsively on my retreat actually decided to contact a surfing coach and tried to go surfing. It ended up giant swell in the Pacific, people. Like the coach got out of the water because it was so big and kind of scary the way the waves were crashing into the cliffs. But I haven't really done something like that on my retreat before because, you know, I'm supposed to be like sitting and thinking and writing. But it really was kind of the perfect way to say, hey, this used to be a really important part of my life. And I want to get back into it and I'm going to do it right now and I'm going to practice right now. So I have a couple more surf lessons lined up and we used to surf years ago, but it's been about 10 years since we surf regularly. And I'm super excited about deciding to continue to be an athlete and whatever that looks like now for me as an almost 40-year-old person. And another piece of this reconnecting with my athletic self is also how much I enjoyed eating really healthy and just taking really good care of my body. So at least for a while, I'm not really dogmatic about these things, but it's felt really good even in this week as I've been home, not to drink any coffee and not to drink any alcohol and really to not have any sugar. So that doesn't mean I'll never ever have those things in the next year, but I feel like it's been so helpful to just listen to what's working and to try some different patterns and to start with simplicity, start with like very basics and then add things as I need to or want to, but don't feel mindless in my consumption of food or goods or even the way that my schedule can consume me. And that's the whole point of simplicity, I think, is start simple and you can add if you want to. But the minute that you're buried under a pile of activities or sweets or stuff, you've lost, you know, you've lost your freedom and you've lost your capacity to self-reflect and you've lost your flexibility.
I think to kind of bring it all back around, I mean, we started the episode by talking about simplicity of stuff, simplicity of life, simplicity of making decisions that don't require you to complicate things. Both sounds like with you, it's food, schedule, maybe headspace, ability to focus on fewer things. And if you're listening to this and you feel like you don't have the simplicity that you want, it's might be time for a retreat, or it might just be time, if you already know the changes, if you, you know, you've gotten some ideas from what we've been saying here, probably time to maybe make one, try to make one change. You can't change this all at once. It's too drastic, but make a list of them and then start with something and just start eating more simply or eating better and try to do that for a month. And by that point, it'll be a habit. And then you try to tackle the next one and you layer them on.
It feels good to feel like you are in possession of your own life and that other things aren't ruling you. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.